What's going on? We are back with another episode of the Half Cast Podcast. We're redoing the intro because my co-host over here came late, so we thought we'd give it another crack. But we've got a cool episode. We have the newest signed athlete, Kevin Jussie. Is it Jussie?
Yeah, Jussie. Yeah.
Jussie or Jussie?
Just say it.
We also have Doug Viney, which was really cool. He's one of the owners of City Kickboxing, and it was cool to see how like City Kickboxing started, also his early career, how it got started, and pretty much almost getting cancelled. So he tried to cancel us on his first step. So thanks for coming in. How's baby actually?
Yeah, good. 2 weeks old now.
Yeah.
So getting a bit of sleep, which is good. How's the end of camp been?
Yeah, good, man. Okay, I'm ready. ready to fight now, man. I went to got some tracksuits, bro. They're the best tracksuits, all right.
Comfy, yeah.
The only thing is, I noticed they don't put the price on the price tags when you go in the shop. It's like a lucky dip. So you go up the front and then you're like, oh.
You didn't use my discount code?
No, I was gonna say, you know, I actually don't like doing discounts, bro, because I always expect people to buy my shit full price. So I'm gonna buy yours. No. But thank you. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Yo, do you ever get frustrated that you cannot watch certain live sports events like some niche fight cards from China featuring the next stylebender because they aren't televised or available in your region? Luckily, with NordVPN, I can switch my virtual location to a country that is showing the fights I want to watch so I don't miss out and can watch the action live. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/halfcast to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Kevin, yes, big Kev, thanks for coming in, man.
Thank you for having me, Tazan. Yeah, yeah.
Very excited. Obviously, it was pretty interesting because we were so excited about it. When I first got to camp, I was like, man, you're going to get in here, you're going to sign, you wanted to get on to Paris, and it ended up working out way better. Thank you. You might as well thank Kai. Oh, here he is now. The man. Yeah.
Few minutes, hey.
We'll just thank you. Kevin was just thanking you.
Good brother.
Oh, thanks for popping in, bro. So let's if you could just give us like a rundown, Kev, where you started your like martial arts career, early career. How did you get into it?
Yeah, I studied with judo at first since I was like a young child, and I was 4 years old when I studied. My parents made me do it because I was a bit like overactive at home, so yeah. They needed me to spend energy elsewhere than home. Did it for most of my life really, and when I stopped, I was like 21 22, stopped, kind of started doing a normal life, let's say, you know.
Sorry, where you stopped doing judo at 22?
I stopped competing in judo at 22. And I was just over it really, you know, because I've done it for most of my life and that was getting a bit like too much.
Yeah.
And yes,
you won the nationals, was it?
I've done the national comps and I've been on the podium a few times.
Yeah,
I've won them.
Judo, one of France's national sports.
Oh yeah, 100%. Soccer is the biggest sport, and judo is probably the second one.
Okay. Wow!
So yeah, that's huge. Yeah, judo is huge back home, and that's one of the best countries in the world. France is one of the best countries in the world for
Interesting.
Judo.
Interesting.
So yeah, I did that for a long time.
Yeah.
Then I stopped because I was like, fuck it, like I've done it too much and I'm not interested anymore. Yeah, 100%. Especially when you do it, you know, like you're 14, 15, 16, all your mates go out and you don't do none
sacrifice
of it.
Sacrificed all that already.
100%, man. I was already training twice a day since I was 15 years old, you know, which was great in a sense because I got like physically stronger and stuff. Mm. But you don't have the same kind of lifestyle than most of your mates, you know?
Yeah, but wouldn't change it for the world as well, brother. Well, 100%. Like, looking back on it, like you think about all those parties you missed out on, what for? There's going to be plenty of those on the boats after the UFC, eh?
Absolutely. No, I'm grateful, man. And, you know, like, I think you grow from it. Like, there were some good things, some bad things, but at the end of the day, without it, I wouldn't be here today, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, do you think it laid your foundation of, like, your work ethic and, dedication?
Big time. Yeah. 100%. Like, training twice a day since you are young, and it becomes normal. It's just, like, your normal routine.
Yeah.
then that's so weird to don't do it anymore. Like when I stopped and I was 22 and I started having a normal job, I was working in a restaurant and I just didn't understand why people were like just walking, going home, and just doing that every day. I just didn't get it.
Yeah,
like between every shift, I was just going to the gym and lifting weights and and you know, like for me, that was just normal.
Yeah.
And
people thought more fulfillment, eh?
Yeah.
In your life. Man. Outside of just your normal
100%. Like I feel it, otherwise you have no goals, you know, you have nothing to achieve and you don't really know what to look forward to.
And I think like one of the things, cool things about martial arts and especially doing it from such a young age is that like at the core of it, the whole thing is to like when you go into martial arts, you every day you're trying to get better.
Yeah.
And that becomes a part of you that like you, whether it's a move or whatever you're doing, you're trying to better yourself every single day. And sometimes when you get stuck in those jobs, you're not getting better. You're just coming there to get your money and then
I swear. And everyone is like waiting for Friday night. You know what I mean? For us, it's no Friday night. We turn Saturday and Sunday anyway. You know what I mean? It's like it doesn't matter what day it is. It's the same shit anyway.
Yeah.
So what area in France did you grow up in? Paris?
No, in the Alps. So like in the nature and stuff. I've lived in Paris for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But luckily, not longer than that. Paris is all right for a few years, or that's good for holidays, you know? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was for long, brother. It's a fucking cultural change, I'll tell you that much. I just wasn't expecting
it. What was the shock?
Fuck, I don't want to put it on Freelance. I don't want to put it on your whole... Right, they weren't the most, like, hospitable. Like,
I feel you.
Yeah, like, there was definitely nice people there for sure. But I also liked that about the country, that they're like, nah, this is how we're doing it. Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? You got to respect that. They're like, nah, this is our country. This is how we're doing it. We're not changing for you. So I did sort of like,
learn English, you learn French.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Nobody speaks English.
Yeah, so I did like that. But man, when they say the croissants are different, brother. I was eating up. So, I might have drank a bit of red wine too. I went through some bottles, but sorry, we're going on a tangent there, brother. So, but
you said in the Alps, so you're close to the snow, right?
Yeah, like 15 minutes away from the first ski resorts, really. So, yeah, same thing. I said skiing, I was like, I don't know, like full, you know, like these videos of me like skiing in between my dad's leg and he's just like, you know, like teaching me how to ski and stuff. That's so cool. Yes, that was a normal thing back then.
Mad.
And what year did you move to Australia? Did you do an OE and so did you end up staying or?
Yes, so I've done Scotland for 2 years. That's where I've learned English when I stopped judo and I like walked as a normal person.
Yeah.
And you went and learned English in Scotland.
Yeah, bro.
That's where you got the accent. I was like, brother, this is going to be our first one that needs subtitles.
Now I went there, like my ex-girlfriend was studying there.
Yeah.
So I just went there. I was like, yeah, good opportunity. I'm stopping judo. I don't know what I'm going to do. It's a good like chance to learn a new language and kind of figure out what I'm going to do with my life, really.
Yeah.
And then I met some dudes who told me about MMA. I'm like, okay, sweet. Like,
mad.
What is it?
Yeah.
How do we do it? And I wanted to travel to Australia, so
2016.
Oh, yeah. When the end of 2016, and studied straight to when I landed in Australia, and here we are.
Mad.
So in Australia, you went to what, Sydney or Melbourne?
I landed in Sydney, and I went straight to Melbourne because I've heard like there was a good gym to train there. A mate of mine used to train there, so I just went there.
Which gym?
Absolute MMA.
Oh, well,
yeah. So that was mostly grappling. Like now they're doing more MMA, but back then that was mostly grappling.
Yeah.
And stayed there for 4 years. Got better into like jiu-jitsu and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I came here because of striking. Obviously, when I was in Melbourne, I've heard of CKB. And I feel like, oh yeah, all the best strikers are over there, you should go. I went there for a training camp in 2019 as an old gym. Loved it, like love the team, the people and stuff. And I decided to move here full time. And luckily I moved before COVID.
Yeah.
So at least like New Zealand was all right. And so it's been like 3.5 years or something.
Wow.
I loved about when you made the move, because a lot of people don't understand like, when you do go all in, like you're sacrificing everything and like even your comforts, you're living at the gym at one point.
Yeah.
I remember coming into the gym, I was like, here we go. We got one that's like, you know, he's going to stick it out because not many people would do that, you know, come all the way halfway across the world just to get better and then live at the gym just to, I guess, not miss training and put everything together. So to see where you're at now, it's pretty cool to know that it's all for something, you know?
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, I think as long as you love what you're doing every day, it doesn't really matter, like, all the other shit, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I lived in my van for like fucking a few months.
Yeah.
I lived at the gym for like 8 months or something. But I didn't really care. Yeah. I was training, doing what I love.
Yeah. Life is a martial art, I say. 100%. And the journey that you've taken, man,
now when I think about it, I'm like, fuck, I wouldn't do it again. Yeah. Because now you have a bit more, like, you know, I feel more comfortable at home.
Yeah.
But back then, it was perfect.
So I know mum was here recently, but even how is it with being away from family?
Yeah, most of the time it's all right.
Yep.
Because I've left to Scotland 2015, so it's been a long time now, you know, and I was young. And even before, like, I was living away from my family because of judo. In judo, you compete every weekend anyway, you know what I mean? So, like, you're never home really.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sometimes I miss them, you know. That's not like I can fly for a weekend, just off a weekend and come back.
Yeah.
First, it cost me like $3,000 back and forth to fly, and it takes 30 hours, you know?
Yeah. And like, one thing that's like interesting with you is like, man, a lot of the judo players I met, for like, considering how long you've been doing it, you don't seem too banged up. Like, you know, so like, I'm thinking of, is it Dan Kelly? Daniel Kelly?
Yeah.
Like, bro, broken, you watch him before he trains, like, he goes through a whole roll of strapping tape.
But
you don't look like you're that.
No, so, for me, I'm all right. Like, I injured my shoulder, I got surgery on my shoulder years ago. I broke most of my fingers and stuff with a gi, but, like, that thing's, like, it doesn't really matter now. Like, it doesn't change too much. My knees are all right, my ankles are all right. My neck, obviously, is a bit fucked up, but I think every fighter has the same thing. But yeah, no, I'm pretty lucky. But I try to like look after myself as well as possible, you know, like in terms of recovery and stuff. So I make sure I can stay healthy for as long as possible and obviously keep fighting for a long time.
I remember when you were fighting on the local scene in Australia, like Hicks and Internal. What was like a pinnacle point in your career where you're like, okay, I can actually make a run and take this to the highest level?
Man, it was like from the very beginning before I even fought, to be honest. Because when I moved to Australia, my first training ever, like striking training, was sparring with a pro. So I got to Melbourne and I went there. I was like, yeah, well, I'm here to train and to fight. You know, like some of those crazy guys who come to the gym and literally say, yeah, I'm here to fight, to beat UFC. That was me.
Yeah,
I made it though.
Fuck no, yes, I love that.
But I swear I was one of them. But the difference is,
yeah, here's another one.
They understood because like, I took them down. Like, I was fucking bad at like striking and stuff because I've never done it, obviously. Yeah. But I was physically strong because of judo, and I had also a grappling background already, so I was kind of comfortable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they saw what I was, and I came to the gym and I trained twice a day right away. So I was not like just coming once a week and acting like I wanted to be good, you know?
Yeah.
So I realized right away, man, I can out-grapple those guys already. And I've never fucking done jiu-jitsu, you know what I mean? And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm just need to get good at striking now. And I was doing striking twice a day already.
Yeah.
That was not as good as what it is here, but that was still great to get better, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that is one of the things, man, like even I see some of these young kids, and it's just consistency, bro. Like,
man,
every single day turning up, you know, like, doesn't matter how you feel, doesn't matter what, like, even if you have a shit session, it's still better than not doing the session.
100%. It adds up. You need to think long term. You can't think, oh, yeah, I'm going to be world champion next week. Nah, but think like 5-10 years time from now.
Was there ever a point, like, so you knew that you wanted to be in the UFC from there? Do you know, like, was there ever a point where you're in the van and you're going, fuck, like, this UFC thing, is it getting away from me? Like, now that you're here, it's like you can look back and go, fuck yeah. But do you know, I've seen you do so many spiders, so many cans, the fights have pulled out, and then you're still like, nah, still in there. Like,
back then, when that was still early, like 3-4 years ago, that was all right. I knew that was going to happen eventually, but that was more like 3 weeks ago. I'm like, man, I did everything. Like, I won everything in Australia. I've proved I'm number one.
There's not much more you can
do. There's no more I can do. Yeah. Like, the timing was perfect because I win 2 months before UFC Australia and UFC France.
Yeah.
And they still didn't call me. I'm like, what the fuck can I do? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if it's not happening now, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe they just don't want me, you know?
Yeah. Stress. So that's when I was like, starts going through your head, starts playing with these. Yeah, man.
But like literally a week before I got the call. But I was trying to like keep my mind clear and be like, you know what? If it doesn't happen in Australia and like ask them, like, they don't want to, well then I'll make other plans, you know.
Yeah.
But let's stay focused, let's stay sharp, keep training, and get ready, and that's all I can do really.
So that morning you came into the gym and Eugene said those words, you're in the UFC, what was your initial reaction?
I was feeling released, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was not happiness, that was more like, fuck, finally I'm not
I
haven't done all that crazy work for nothing.
Limbo as well.
I'm like, fuck, finally. Like, I knew that was more like I knew it was gonna happen, but that was more like a certification. You know what I mean? Fuck, like, I wasn't crazy. I knew I was ready to go and do it, you know, and now gets the opportunity. So
Looking at the Sydney card, your opponent, what you think of the fight night, what you're expecting coming into, like, you know, like, it's going from another like local shows to now one of the biggest shows in Australia. What's your thought process going through that?
You know what, I think the fact that I've been to quite a few shows with you guys, like I've been to UFC Houston, to New York and all those stuff, and being at the back doing all fight week with the boys helped me.
Helped me
a shitload, because it made me realize that's the exact same thing. There's more cameras around, more fans around, you have more pictures and more fucking like all those stuff you do, but the fight itself is the same thing. And then I watch those guys fighting and I'm like, man, I would beat those guys 100%. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so I think it's all about like, am I going to be able to control my emotions on fight night?
Yeah.
And I'm sure I will. So then that's sweet. That's the only thing I want to be focused on, you know? Everyone asks me, oh yeah, how excited, how happy are you? I'm like, yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah.
But I'm not over excited, because it doesn't mean shit until I get in there, get the job done. Then don't show it. You'll see how excited I am afterwards.
Yeah, it's funny that, man. It's because I don't know if it's just that, like, it's not people that... maybe not fighting, but sports in general, like, that's always a question. Are you excited? I was like, I've never been excited to fight, because, like, if you imagine you're like, if you're going like this, what do you think happens before the fight? So I try to be like, you know, just like the same, no matter what. Yeah. Because as soon as you start going like that, but the only thing is, it doesn't work because my missus hates it, because then it's like birthdays, Christmas, I'm always like this. Like, there's never
no
like
excitement.
Well, unless it's a Friday night.
Unless you're at the drink Raspberry.
In saying that, the after party will all be there. It'll be at Penrith Panthers. I think it's Izzy and Ty's show, but whatever.
We'll be there.
We'll be there with our party pants on.
I know what you're talking about when you've done the ride along for like fight week before you got into the UFC.
Yeah.
And it's like, I had that realization as well. It's like, you're not putting people that you grew up watching or fighters that you know are in your division, putting them on this like pedestal where there's like, they're untouchable. Because then it kind of makes it more like, they're human, like they're just normal people like us. And then you're like, oh, I could hold my own against these guys. Like, they're not, they are like good fighters, but they're not like something to be scared about.
100%. Like, even I remember when I was at the UFC PI last year and I've seen some of the fighters and I'm like, oh, fuck, I thought this guy was much bigger, looked much stronger. And then you look at him and you're like, damn, I look twice bigger than this guy.
Yeah.
And you look at them hitting pads and stuff and you're like, man, like, I can't do all this shit, 100%.
And with how Eugene like surprised you with your announcement, that's what I love about this gym, because it's like the guys that have already been established in the UFC and you know, doing well in their careers, we've put down the ladder for the next guy. And like, I did it for, I think, Brad when he got in the UFC, Izzy did it for me, and then for Eugene to kind of surprise you, like, it's always like a special moment, because it's like, man, you see all this hard work behind the scenes, but then you can see like how much it means to everyone, you know. So that's what I love about the gym, because it's more like it's a team, it's an individual sport, but you need a team to prepare, and like, those are like special moments that you'll have forever, like when you first got the call up, or you know, how it made you feel.
Yeah, most people don't understand, but as I was saying before, like, that's like a family, you know.
Definitely.
It looks like we're all happy for each other and helping each other. And I think that's one of the big reasons why the gym is so successful.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's many things, you know, like if you bring any shitty people, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
But like, everyone cares about each other's success and they want everyone to do good. And I think that's why having six people on the card we wish we were seven.
Yeah.
But having six people on the card, like so many guys on the same card, 100%. I think it's just going to pump us up big time.
Yeah, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, man. It's so crazy to think, not even just like as a team, but like, man, the coach just takes that on. You know what I mean? Like he goes, yeah, six people, like let's go. Like he's got to warm them all up, get ready for each one, run in, back out. Like, and he just is like,
He's confident.
So I love that.
It's going to be a big day to remember for sure. For the gym, it's going to be insane.
What's it been like? I know you boys are pushing hard for this, for the last week of your camp before it's fight week. What's the feeling like when you're ticking off those last hard sessions? You know, the last, I know it's not their last sparring, but last night was your VO2 wrestling.
Yeah, it feels good. Like everyone is healthy. Like we don't, like none of us have like big injuries or anything. Yeah. And everyone feels good, I feel. Everyone look fit and just like the spider last Sunday, everyone was looking insane, you know. It's good to see like everyone pushing hard and
not phased.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm ready for the end of camp. This like... camp is carrying on. I'm ready for it to end. I'm just excited to fight, but like bro, I look at you, I walk in the morning and just another one in the bag, and just seeing everything culminating to this final week, bro. It's especially with you coming in, I was so fucking excited about you coming on, and then just with us all training so hard and like everyone pushing every day, you see some of the boys just coming in like, because it's like one guy's might be going it through hard that day, so everyone else like gives them a bit of energy, and then like he's doing well the next day, but then he's like, so that it's just been really cool like having that many guys on and getting after it, especially we've got so many guys fighting on the night before. It's Friday now, isn't it?
And Cameron on the continues
earlier
as well, so like,
such an exciting time for the gym.
Yeah,
man,
with everyone peaking at the right time all together. For sure.
Yeah,
having everyone in camp at the same time is a big thing. Yeah. So much easier when you're on the asshole back for fucking hours and hours for 8 weeks.
Yeah.
When you have your boys around you, you know, and you have to do the same thing.
Definitely.
It's a big commitment. I don't think a lot of people realize that, like, there's no day off. Like, we train 7 days a week, two, three times a day. On a Saturday night, you're expected to be there, help and give your body to the guys that are fighting on a Friday or Saturday.
Yep.
And then they'll turn up on a Sunday when you're training. So it's like, bro, when do you rest?
And I also think that that goes back to that family thing. And that's leadership and why I think the gym is so successful, because that is expected. Whether you're the top guy or the bottom guy, you're there to be, whether if you're not fighting, you're still there to help the guys that are. So I think that's definitely what's creating that bond. But
And the boys that live at the gym, it's like they're rent. There's no sleeping in.
I don't know. There's no one living there, brother. What can we expect? What can the fans expect, brother, in UFC Sydney coming up?
Well, hopefully an exciting fight. From what I've seen from his style, I think our style match up quite good. You know, like he's quite aggressive, like an aggressive striker.
Yep.
And obviously my striking has improved a shitload since I've moved to CKB, and my grappling is quite good too. So if he gets over aggressive, I think he could go flying. I think the crowd would love that. Usually when I have some big takedowns, even in like smaller crowd, I can already hear them. So when there will be 25,000 people screaming, I'm looking forward to it too.
Nice, bro. And in the future, what can we expect?
Well, going all the way to the top, you know what I mean? Like,
there we go.
Like getting the UFC contract is a great thing, but for me, that's not the end goal, you know? That's just a great thing on the way. But, the goal is to go all the way. 100%. Obviously, I'm passionate and I keep working, keep getting better every day. But within the next few years, hopefully, we go all the way to the top. That's the goal.
Amen. Well, thank you very much, Kev. Appreciate you coming on board.
Thanks for coming.
Just like that, perfect timing. Look at we got the man sneaking in.
Perfect timing. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you.
All right. And rolling straight into it, I wasn't sure how this podcast was going to work because normally we only have one guest, but I wanted to get as many guests on as we could before we head off to the fights. So we have one of the other owners of CKB. Thank you, Big Doug. Thanks for coming in, brother. I appreciate your time.
Cheers, bro.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how we'll roll with it, but I just wanted to maybe just get your brief history of how you got into martial arts, your background. Like, I've got like some of your titles here and stuff, but if you just give us your background and how you started, brother. If you
kind of like I first met Lolo Furunati when I was about 10 years old, and then he had like a kung fu kickboxing back in the day. and we all had to wear like kung fu outfits and all this kind of shit. And that only lasted 2 weeks. Yeah. And my auntie kind of got sick of picking me up from Avondale to from Mount Albert, blah blah blah, and the money that she was giving me to waste on bus fares going back, me and Lolo's youngest brother were wasting on spaces. So
like, playing games.
Yeah, yeah. So she was like, "Fuck that." That's the end of that. And then anyway, when I fast forward to like I was like maybe 15 or something, I got booted out of two colleges.
Just doing well in school.
I got booted out of one college at 15, and then I got booted out of the next one 2 weeks later. But then they let me back in, and then I got booted out 2 years after that. And then I was kind of like thinking, "Fuck, what the hell am I gonna do now?" You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then I remembered Lolo. And then I was like, "Fuck me, I'll just go fuck around there." So then I trained with him for about. I was in the beginners class for about a year, and I just fucked around. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then that's when I kind of started hanging out with Ronnie and Ray Sifo.
Yeah. For people that like don't understand about Lolo, like Lolo obviously had a lot of like people that don't know Lolo. If you could just give a brief.
He's one of the main students that was from Philip Lam, who first brought kickboxing into to New Zealand and all that kind of stuff. And then I was kind of happy to be his nephew, so then that means I didn't have to pay for shit. But hey,
that helps. Yeah.
I'm a family. So I went there and I fucked around, and then after that, a year later, I started hanging out with Ronnie and Ray Sefo, and they kind of started teaching me how to train properly and all that kind of stuff. And then that was probably about another year, and then I was probably in beginner's class for like maybe 2 years before I got allowed to come into start sparring. And I remember the first 3 weeks of that was fucking shit. Like, you know, I was like getting black eyes and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
But then I started getting better and like, oh shit, hey. And then that rolled through. And then what was the next question?
What was the point when it became, when you thought that it would become a career? Like, because was it your amateur boxing? Were you boxing or kickboxing more at this stage?
I started all kickboxing.
Yeah.
And then I think I was just, yeah, I was fucking, and then I ended up going to prison. I went to prison for robbing a few banks.
Yeah.
And then when I came out of prison, that's when I was kind of like, okay, no more fucking around.
Mm.
I'll start.
Just because wasn't good at the robbing banks that got caught or...
Yeah. I robbed like maybe like 12, 13 banks in 4 days.
Damn! Yeah. Putting up numbers.
I know.
Shit.
I know. But then, you know, after I think about it, like, you know, they're like saying, oh, you got away with 214,000. And I was like, I don't think so. You know what I mean? Like... I don't. You know, well, I think the real scammers was the insurance. The bankers did an insurance job.
They took the numbers up.
Yeah, hard.
They robbed you.
Yeah, they used me to get more money. You know, like, fuck. Ask them, hey, do I get 10% of that back? So this is the Book of Mormon. You got to give me back 10%. You know. So yeah.
That one took a turn. So how was your professional career? Well,
first you got to go to prison and suck some cock and then... Oh, but mind you, if I was in prison in Sydney,
yeah,
I would have definitely learned how to do a cracky.
There you go. There you go.
So yeah.
Still plenty of time.
I'm retired. But and then when I came out of prison, I realized you come out with either two attitudes. One, you like this bad boy image and you keep on kind of doing it again.
Mm.
Or you kind of learn from it and you never go back.
Yeah.
But then there's a third reason. It's winter. You got nowhere to stay. I'll do something stupid. Hey, I get a free accommodation, free food. Hey, it's all good.
Better than a bunk,
yeah. Yeah, that'd be my better third breakfast option.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, where am I going to stay? Fuck it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's when I kind of started training properly.
Mm. Mm.
So what year was this? What, about Balmoral League?
Man, you would have still been in your dad's test. That was like, I think I had the 20th in prison. Wait. How old are you now?
30.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm 47.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you wouldn't be around. Hona, or maybe you'll be 3 years old.
Yeah.
Mm. Still training under Lolo. You won your kickboxing and won the K1 under Lolo.
Went to the Olympics.
Yeah, went to the Olympics for boxing.
Oh, no.
Took another quick turn.
Yes, so I won K1 New Zealand, went to the Olympics under Lolo. And then I left Lolo after the Olympics. And then I was going to retire. And then Jason said, he was like, don't retire, you're still young. Ring up Ray and see if Ray will look after you.
Mm. Was he in the States at this time? Or
yeah, still? Yeah. He was living in America.
Yep.
And then I rang up Ray, and then he said, sweet. And then we just kind of went from there. And then we went to Romania first for a fight, and I fought this fucking massive cunt, Brooke Wallace. He was like 6'6", steroid motherfucker.
Weight was this at? Super heavy?
Super duper.
Super duper.
Yeah. And then when I went to go, I still remember some of the crowd, like, you know, it was like, they thought I was going to get slaughtered, you know, because I was so small compared to him.
Yeah.
But I was tagging this cunt, you know what I mean? And then every time I tagged him, I heard the whole crowd was like, wow, wow. And then I got tired. And then my hands came down, and I went, fuck. And then the kind of called me. And then I had my hand here, and then he was southpaw, and then he threw his jab, and I slipped it, and then he fucking threw a head kick, and I ate it.
Oh,
and then you see this photo of me just crumpled up in the corner, singing Kumbaya. You know what I mean? So yeah.
What was your biggest highlight of kickboxing career or fighting career actually?
Biggest career was always fighting Bada Hari.
Wow.
You know what I mean? He's my number one. He's my most highlighted fight.
Mm-hmm.
But my most hardest fight was fighting an Australian guy, Chris Topolidis.
Mm.
You know, so I think I fought him in Oceania. He was 116 kgs. I was only 96.
Wow.
And then and he belted me.
Yep.
First round, fucking he had broke my ribs, broken and dislocated my thumb. And then when I went back, and that's kind of when I realized, when I feel something broken, when I feel pain, it must be broken. And then I went back to the corner and I was like, Lolo, something's wrong with my hand. It doesn't feel right. Lolo just slapped my face and goes, don't think about that. You think about winning the fight. And I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Gotcha. All right. And then second round comes along. He drops me again, I think maybe twice. And then in the last 10 seconds of that second round, I knock him out. Wow. You know what I mean? So, like, I always think that was my hardest fight.
Mad.
And because he broke my ribs, I went to fight Andrew Peck after that. And he was another 20 kg heavier than me. And he just threw one kick to where my ribs were fucked and I couldn't get back up. Yeah.
And man, that, like, those they're not called round robins, those fighting on the same nights when your body's going cold and having that injury, man, it must have hurt so much more.
Yeah,
hey?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially the ribs.
But nothing hurts more than a loss. I was like, motherfucker.
Back in the day, can you remember, like, when who was in the room at sparring back at Balmoral at its heights?
Oh, yeah, that would have been all the boys. Jason Suddy, Ronnie Siffle, Ray Siffle, Clay Matangi, Jason Vermoor, Jason... Did I say Jason Suddy? Yeah, Jason Vermoor. All the boys, you Mike know, Buster, Angrove. Fucking, yeah. Mike fucking Angrove. you know Mike fucking Angrove? He was actually the guy we all wanted to beat up.
Oh, is it?
Ben Boyce.
No. No, he gets enough fighting. Nah, but Mike, because like Mike, he was always so fast, so fit.
Yeah.
When we all go to the track on Saturday mornings, you'll think he like stole one of the brown boys' car because you see him running in front and all a whole bunch of others chasing after him. You know what I mean? So fucking yeah. So he was like, and then I remember was like Ronnie and Ray. They were like, oh man, I did this fucking good conversation on a good combination on Mike. You know what I mean? So that's why Mike's got a fucked body, is because like he was like, yeah, body shot.
What was the transition like from fighter to coach?
Fuck, this
and,
is...
And sorry, and how did you know that was the time?
Now, so, fighter to coach, I never planned it to get City Kickboxing.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
I can't tell you the full story, because someone might end up in... But let's just say there was a piece of, there was someone that wasn't supposed to be in Auckland, and he was a bit of a piece of shit. And I heard he was working at City Kickboxing, at a gym, City Kickboxing. So I said, fuck it, well, I have to do what I said I was going to do, and I better go take him for a drive. So I went to go pick him up, but the guy wasn't there. You know, his business partner, Duan, was there. And I know Duan because me and Duan, we used to train together under Lolo. And I was like, oh, Duan, where's that piece of shit? And he was like, oh, he's not here. And I said, why? And I told him what happened. And he said, oh, please, Doug, don't take him out for lunch here. And I was like, okay, I'll go take him out somewhere else. And then, but anyway, 2 weeks later, Duan rings me up and he was like saying, oh, fuck, I should have listened to you. That fucking cunt just shit on me. And I was like, I told you. Where is he? I'll go get him. I'm hungry. and then fucking he was like, nah, he's gapped it. He's gone. But then he goes, oh, but wait, look, I need a hand run in this gym. Can you help me out? And I was kind of like, well, I've already, you know, I'm kind of a little bit busy with because I just already won the Olympics. I mean, not won the Olympics. I was already
I won that one. Yeah, just chuck that in there. Eh? I just got the gold and
just got the gold tooth at the Olympics, you know. And then I was kind of like trying to focus on my career and that. And but I said, oh, look, I'll help out for part time. Mm. And he said, cool. So then I kind of worked with him for maybe under 2 years, and then he kind of had a bit of like. And back then, you see the gym now. A busy class at City Kickboxing back in those days would be max maybe 15 people.
Far out.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be, and every now and then, maybe once in a blue moon, you might see 30.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they were like, whoa, shit.
And why they're saying that, just for the people that don't know, at City Kickboxing at the moment, there might be a couple hundred, up to a few hundred if there's a few classes going, few hundred people going.
I can't exactly say the exact number, but we've probably got around about 300-400 members right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's how from then to now, like when you see like maybe 15 people in one class to like how busy the gym's now, it's fucking crazy. It's mad, mate. It's fully sick.
Mad.
Yeah, it's mad.
Mad. Hectic.
Hell, you say hectic?
Hectic. Oh, yeah. Oh, you really say that?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, sick, mate. It's fully sick. Yeah. It's fucking, sometimes it still hits me like saying, fuck.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
How many places is City Kickboxing, like location-wise? At the old gym, was that the first place it was ever at?
Nah, where you came was the second.
Second. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then when you, but it was just like right next door.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So the first gym was right then. And then we were already looking for a new gym. And then for some reason, that one just came a lot bigger. I mean, that just came available.
Oh, yeah.
And then I remember looking up and I had a high ceiling.
Mm.
And I was going to get this cage. And I said, I got this cage from America.
Yeah.
And then, did you see the cage? Were you there when the cage was there?
Yeah. Like blowing out.
Yes.
It was good.
It was shifted. But then we kind of realized people were scared of it. It was like dead space.
Yeah.
Big fucking cage, but no
one wanted to. It hurts you, eh? When you hit. Because it wasn't like padded or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, when you walk in, they were like, oh, shit. Yeah. So, when you came, that was our second place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, how long were you guys at that second place for? Quite a while though,
I can't remember. A few years.
Was it hard going from fighter to coach?
I kind of. This is kind of good because this is when kind of Eugene kind of came, I kind of saw what Eugene was kind of doing. Mm. He kind of seemed to fall straight into the coach's path quite easily.
Yeah.
Where for me, it's kind of like I was kind of like teaching how I was kind of taught, you know, and things that I've learned on the way. Like sometimes you'll know something. Like when you're fighting someone, you'll figure out how they set up a punch or a kick or something like that, and you'll be like, shit, that's pretty cool. because they caught you with it. Yeah. Now you learned their trick, and now you applied that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're so, more feel, like doing it by feel. And that's one really cool thing that's about City Kickboxing. Like, you'll go train with you, you've got your style, you go with Twist, he's got his style, you go with Eugene, there's like the, all this stuff that's just come together in one spot.
And then it sucks when you do one thing wrong and then you go over it. That's not what we told you, cunt. Do what I fucking told you, I'll stick my dick in your ass. Oh, that was Mike. Mike was saying that. I'm never watching you guys playing, but if I was watching, you know, I'd be like, damn, Mike.
Who's some of the people that the fans can like look out for that you're training at the moment? Like, you got Big Hemi Junior.
What's it like, obviously, coaching your son as well?
Oh, you could just change the question. That'll be better.
Yeah.
Fuck my question. No, I just chucked that in the toilet. And
okay, you know, Kai, you know, I'm going to talk to you.
Yeah.
It's actually fucking scary as a motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like, wait, when your kids get fucking bigger and they want to start fighting and that, like, when I fight, I'm sweet, I'm cool, I'm confident, blah, blah, blah. But every time that motherfucker jumps in the ring, I got to try and keep the straightest poker face in the world, you know what I mean? And then, like, fucking, like, it's nerve-wracking, you know what I mean? But in a way, it's kind of like, it's fulfilling.
Yeah.
Like, whenever he did something good in rugby or basketball or now in fighting...
Yeah.
I'm more happier watching him compared to any of my highlights. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, fuck.
Did you want him to fight? Did you want him to fight, Butt? Because, like, you saying that stress, like, at first, was that something?
At first, I was kind of like, it'll be cool. He was fighting, you know what I mean? But it's kind of like, I kind of learned with my daughter, if you push too hard, they'll walk away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you always see Roman is at the gym. He's loving it because I kind of didn't push him.
Yeah.
But when they were both, when him and my older daughter, Shante, were both doing athletics, I kind of realized I pushed her too hard into training.
Mm.
Now she's just kind of walked away.
Yeah.
You know, like,
because she had a bad relationship with it. It's like,
it was my fault.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, in my eyes, you want your daughter to at least learn boxing or jiu-jitsu or wrestling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I was like, because there's heaps of creeps out there.
Yeah.
So I said, man, do boxing and either do wrestling or jiu-jitsu. Well, one, something like that.
Yeah.
And then and I was like, go fucking do jiu-jitsu. He goes, no, fucking go do jiu-jitsu. I fucking beat the shit out of it. That's when I realized, you know what? I think I went a little bit too hard there.
Yeah.
I can't imagine watching, like, even the daughter compete, because I know there's one time we were walking out, about to go out to a fight, and Dad was like squeezing the shit out of my traps, and I could feel his nervousness in there. And so I know that it must be the same. Like, you know, watching your son compete or whatever. But that must be a crazy feeling.
Yeah. What age did you let Roman start fighting? Because I know for a while you just let him train.
Yeah, so it's kind of like I'm not big on kids fighting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because, like, we know what happens when you get hit a lot. You know what I mean? And then last thing I want is my son to turn 16, and then he starts talking like this. Oh.
Starts talking like Kevin, eh? No. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Kev, love you.
My name's Kevin.
that is the scariest thing, I guess, for punch drunk and, like,
when you're already developing, right?
That's why I let him start. But, like, I showed him little things going to primary school, like just a parry jab, 1-2, that's it. Mm. You know, if someone's hitting, put your hands up.
Yeah.
When he goes to college, I showed him a little bit more because I'm always scared of bullies.
Yeah.
And then when he was slowly growing up, sometimes I'll let him take photos of you guys hanging out with him, or I'll take photos of him training and I'll post it up because I know kids be watching that shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I wanted to show the other kids that look, my son's training, he knows how to look after him, don't fuck with him. And then he's got all these friends, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I had to kind of do shit like that just because I know I'm not always there with my kids, so I got to make sure, you know, that he's looked after, even though I'm not there.
I remember seeing a photo where Izzy came with Roman to his ball.
Mm.
What was that like? Did he tell you?
No, I didn't know that at all. That was right. But I thought, oh, fuck, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I said, man, he better get his dick sucked tonight. You got Israel here? I'm going to suck your dick.
So is he a bit older than Rob? Oh, no.
No, I didn't mean Roman sucking his dick. No. Hey. I'm on Twitter, motherfucker.
Okay, we'll transition into okay. So one of your, I guess, signature moves is your step over two. I think you've knocked out a lot of people with that same.
Nah. My left hook.
Left hook.
Oh,
okay. There's a few. Yeah.
Shame.
Yeah, obviously you're not watching. Nah, but see the thing is, like, I got this guy here. Everyone's like that. And back in 2002, I fought on a K1 show where a guy, Jordan Javik, he was like the number one European fighter back then.
Mm.
He came to New Zealand, Croatian, and then I dropped him twice in the first round. The crowd was like, wow. And that's the first time ASP Stadium actually sounded like a fucking football field. Because it was like New Zealand versus Croatia. So it was like the five top New Zealand fighters versus the five top Croatians. They were just going off singing their fucking soccer chants. And wah, 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 wah. It was like the best show ever.
Oh,
and then I dropped him twice in the first round. And then the cunt dropped me twice in the second round. But then when I get up, the ref is like, sorry, Doug, I'm gonna stop it. And I was like, no, cunt. But when he dropped me, it's like I landed like that. Because I was semi-unconscious.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So I tore the ligaments in my wrist. And then the doctor said, no point fixing it to retire or it's going to fuck out again. True. So I couldn't really punch hard with my right.
Does it even affect now holding pads or not?
Well, now I've arthritis.
Yeah.
So this is all right. This is the problem. This one doesn't cause any arthritis, but this one does, you know. And it sometimes if I like trying another angle, or, you know. There's no camera, Jay. Oh shit!
And that was Doug's last podcast. Last shit.
Wrap it up.
This is just an audio. I don't see a fucking camera.
It's a podcast. Shit. Casting couch.
This is like my second podcast ever. Shit. How the fuck do I know? Why are you laughing, Kieran? Hey, shit.
So what's
anyway,
up?
Yeah. So anyway, I got that fixed maybe 15 years later. Let's cut. Yeah. I got this fixed just a couple of years ago. So I fought for 15 years with a wrist. So I had to learn to knock you one out with my left hook.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was kind of, if I was fighting overseas somewhere, I was always like, is it winter or summer there? You know what I mean? Because if I knew if it was cold, the arthritis would come.
Oh, it hurts. Yeah, right.
So that means I won't be able to do.
When I was trying to do Wikipedia just to, I'm not going to write, we can't show this on camera, but when I was doing it to figure out like your Wikipedia to write down some notes, I typed in Doug Viney. This is
a white guy? Was it a white guy? Oh, yeah.
I know, we'll leave that out, but I was like, if that's always going to come up now, I know.
Remember that one?
So if you want to go look at what would come up when you type in Doug Viney, you feel free.
It's kind of like, you know, that happened. And then I was like, Hemi, come over here. Hold this bar.
We'll just completely stay away from this one because I'm not getting cancelled on my own podcast. It's like, that's it for your podcast. Wrapped and done.
Well, it depends. Now, then you'll find out who your real supporters are. Hey, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I have no supporters.
And we're like, fuck Doug, we're not fucking doing that kind again.
What's the future? What's the future holding for the City Kickbox and for you?
What's the future hold for City Kickboxing and for me?
How about like 5 years? What do you see?
I've always kind of like been. If Roman's still around, I'm still around.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
So it's kind of like, I know I can't hold pads forever.
Yeah.
And it kind of does take a toll already.
Definitely.
But like, I always say, as long as my son's in the game, then he's not out. So if Dana, if you're listening to this, if you want to make me an offer to buy 50% of City Kickboxing, I'm sure I'd do some bench press first. but come see me in summer, not in winter.
Yeah. We just had the sale of CKV on the podcast. starting at the bid offer.
No. But in all, yeah, cause like, I don't know. Like, for me, it's like, I'm more passionate for my kids. My kids seems to be the only thing I'm really passionate about. So if my son decided to like flag it or something, then I'd be like, okay, maybe I'll just go fishing every day.
Yeah.
He recently did a trip with Hemi to the States.
Yeah.
And did like a training camp over there.
Because I couldn't make it over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my entry visa got denied.
Yeah.
I was going to suck some serious cock to get it.
Even though you didn't need to, you could have...
I'll use my other hand. this one's out. That's one good one. You know?
But for him, that must have been.
But he
great.
Liked it. Like, him and Hemi, they get on sweet. Mm. You know what I mean? So it was kind of, I wanted Roman to come so he can kind of get some international sparring and all that kind of stuff. And man, he lit it up. And he fucking, like, all the reports that messages I got from the guys there, they loved him. Like, because he was so small and he was only amateur and he had like 12 fights, they thought that he was going to get wasted. But man, he smoked these guys. And all these guys were like undefeated 5 fights of pros that.
Mad.
You know what I mean?
I bet that's a massive confidence booster for him, knowing 100%. That like sees a level and it's like, okay, I can do it.
Because if you watch his style is kind of more suited for the pro style.
You know, where
amateur styles is kind of like go out there and throw a million punches. Yeah. You might land 50 of them, but to the judges, you look amazing because you threw a million punches.
Yeah.
But only like maybe half of it landed.
Yeah. I don't.
Oh, so what's the plan for him now? Now he
won the Tonga National Tournament.
Yeah.
He's got South Pacific. So now there's only one more tournament away to actually reaching the Olympics.
Awesome. Oh, that's awesome news.
Yeah. So, but he's still young, and you know, and he's only just turned 19. So if he even wanted to go to Olympics again, he can.
And now, because even if you're pro, right, you can try out.
Yeah, but I hate that bullshit, eh? Yeah. It's kind of like, if you're pro, you're pro.
Yeah, stay pro, yeah.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, Why come back to amateur? Yeah. It's just fucking like, you know, the goal of every amateur boxer was get to fucking make it to Olympics, get a medal, start on a million dollar contract.
Yeah, make your money.
Yeah, hard. Yeah. And then now you start on $1 million and you work your way up.
Yeah.
But fucking now it's kind of like,
come back, go around.
You know what I mean? To me, it doesn't sit well. You know what I mean? But fucking, this whole world is fucking changing. Yep. Yeah.
Well, no, thank you very much for coming on, Doug.
I'm not finished yet.
Oh, no, you can tell if there's any other stories, but we're just, I didn't know how this one was going to work. We're doing 30s, trying to, but thank you very much, bro. It was really cool hearing how the City Kickboxing started.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for trying to get us cancelled.
because you hang out with dodgy people. Hey, you know what I mean?
Thank you, brother.